All right, welcome to the Sports Ethos Saquon Barkley Appreciation Podcast. Welcome to the Sports Ethos LA Chargers Podcast. Brandon, how many fantasy points does this man have right now? With 2:37 left in the game, by the way. We started early because the Eagles are flipping dominating at the moment.
Yeah, so, he got me 46.2 fantasy points.
Jesus Christ.
255 yards rushing, 2 TDs, 4 catches for 47 yards. So, yeah.
But again, welcome to the LA Chargers pod. We will get to the Chargers tomorrow in the Harbaugh Bowl. Very excited to talk about that. But Saquon Barkley, man. Look, MVP conversation, yes. MVP winner through 12 weeks, probably. I can't think of a quarterback that comes close to this. But, you know, Brandon, we've focused on your Eagles offense, you know, every week, it seems like. Let's give me the lowdown on this defense, man. I mean, the Rams are a good offensive team, and they were absolutely shut down for 4 quarters.
It's, you know, like this defense, since the bye week, it's like a switch flipped. I mean, one of the biggest things was bringing in Cooper DeJean to replace Avante Maddox. That was the biggest improvement, because Avante was getting killed in the slot every single week. And you bring in Cooper, who actually he would have started since day one, but he was injured in training camp. So otherwise he would have been starting since week one. But besides him, it's just it's a combination of drafting well and also just drafting players that have bought into Vic Fangio's, you know, just ideas, his philosophy of, I mean, listen, you know, this is the best defensive talent he's had in his career. This is the quickest defensive talent he's had in his career.
This is the quickest defensive talent, period, especially at the cornerback position. Even the Legion of Boom Seahawks took a couple of years to mature and develop at the cornerback position. But what Mitchell and DeJean are doing is special so far.
It's incredibly special. I mean, each week that goes on, it's not just them. Like, Jalen Carter is the, I mean, Jared Verse, I don't think, had a sack tonight. Jared Verse maybe had 2 or 3 pressures, and that was it. But until someone proves me otherwise, Jalen Carter is the best defensive tackle in football right now. He is. There's no question about it, and I won't hear anything else. But he had multiple pressures tonight. I think he had like half a sack tonight. He had multiple stops in the backfield on running plays. He played well. Milton Williams had a sack. The last sack would seal the game.
Pause. Breaking news. Emergency. The Giants have fired head coach Brian Daboll and their general manager.
Wow. Oh. Jesus.
From what I can tell, I haven't seen Adam Schefter's reporting, but I just got it from an official New York source. So I think it's official. I have to confirm, but as it stands, it looks like that is the move here. What is your thoughts?
I feel like it's a scapegoat situation. I said that even if they did fire him, I like him as a coach. I mean, listen, GM, you know, Joe Shane, he had to go. That guy's a bum. But
no, he was terrible. I mean, absolutely atrocious.
Yeah. But otherwise, you know, Brian Daboll, to me, was a good coach with a bad team. I like anybody that can turn Josh Allen into a superstar and can bring that Bills offense to life the way that he did. The Giants were taking a swing on him, hoping he was going to do that in New York. But let's be honest, it wasn't going to happen. Daniel Jones is not Josh Allen. You know, like, that offensive line is terrible. That, you know, nothing about New York was going to really, you know, nothing about New York was going to help Daboll. Not only, like, New York was not going to bring the best out of him. and he was not going to get enough out of them to keep his job. It almost felt like it was doomed from the start. And I feel like he's such a good coach. He's very smart. You know, the Giants don't really ever get blown. I mean, they do get blown out a couple times, but that's because the team's bad. But for a crappy Giants team, he keeps them in a lot of games. His coaching is responsible for keeping them in a lot of games. So I just think it's very scapegoatish. But at the same time, I really think that, you know, I don't know if keeping him would have been, like, it feels like they would have been in limbo either way. Either you keep him and you just don't give him anything to work with, because the Giants just don't do that well. So either you do that and the cycle continues, or you just pretty much, you know, I feel like it's kind of a lose-lose here. I feel like Dable never had a chance to succeed here. And I feel like, Joe Shane is the bigger threat they had to get rid of.
I'm trying to confirm this. I'm having a tough time confirming this. To be truthful, I am having a hard time confirming this. But Wes Steinberg reported it a couple hours ago.
He's a trusted reporter too. I know his work.
So, I mean, I'm trying to get this confirmed at the moment as we're doing this, and I don't know, but even with that, let's just say this isn't completely accurate. This has to happen tomorrow regardless, if it hasn't happened already. That's I think, kind of the point here is, like, even if I'm trying to find other reporting here, but from what I can tell, even if it's not the case, everything that you're saying is 100% true, because everything about this is scapegoatish. We talked about heavily with Dable how good of a coach he is, but if your GM can't put a good roster on the field for you, what are you supposed to do, right? Like, look at Dave Canales in Carolina. Do we really think Dave Canales is the problem with that roster right now? Even as a rookie head coach, do you believe that?
No.
And there's Shane. Hello, and Shane.
So Shane talks first.
Go ahead. Because we just got news that Dable and the GM have been fired.
Right. I saw that. Yeah, this is... First of all, not surprised. You know, do I agree that it's the right decision? Joe Shane, yes, should have been fired a long time ago. But Dable, no. He was not the problem for the Giants, just like Sala.
Yep.
Both of these guys, I do not think that they were the problem. I think they were used kind of unfairly as scapegoats for owners who don't know what they're doing. And, you know, I don't even want to blame it on the GM because, like, I don't think Joe Douglas is a terrible GM. I mean, he's not great, but, like, you know, he's found, you know, in terms of evaluating draft talent, I mean, Jets have drafted pretty well the last few years with the exception of one guy, but otherwise they've gotten, you know, quite a few gems. But, you know, there's the other things like betting your future on a 40-year-old quarterback, and, you know, that's not great. But sorry, my voice is a little horse this evening.
What I'm trying to confirm it. Like, I'm live trying to confirm it, and there's nothing popping up.
Yeah. Until you do that, I'll BS about it.
Because this is doing it live, checking reporting. By the way, this is what happens on this show. We're trying to get you guys as good of reporting as we can. But again, Shane, I think regardless, this is probably going to happen tomorrow anyway, or in the next few days. So I think all these points still stand.
Right, exactly. And if not this week, it'll happen by the end of the year. So it's not, you know. Yeah, but let me tell you, I think Dable this offseason, well, he might not be, but he should be one of the top head coach candidates around the league. I mean, I would move on from my guy and hire him if I were at least, you know, 10, 12 teams in the league. So, you know, we'll see how that goes, where he ends up. But, yeah, is it, you know, I'm sorry, but, like, is it really that difficult to, if you're an owner of a franchise, an NFL franchise, to just make it so that, not even so that you're, like, one of the top competitive, but just, like, to keep it from being an absolute bottom feeder like that? Like, is it really that difficult? Like, I'm sorry, but it's just these teams repeatedly make, you know, these same ones, we all know who they are, they repeatedly make these awful decisions, and it's just like,
I have an answer for you. It's a very simple answer. It's bad ownership.
Which is?
It's bad ownership.
Mm-hmm. No, that's what I'm saying. Like, is it really that difficult to be, to not be a terrible owner? I mean, I know it's obviously it's a hard job, but it's, you know, it's like there's just some things where, you know, you'd think if you had a brain, you'd be like, well, I know Brian's a good coach because of, you know, his track record and coming in here, making us a playoff team the first year. We just need to get him better players. So let's fire the GM and, you know, start over there and let, you know, let Dable breathe a little bit, maybe get some better guys for him. But no, instead it's just, yeah, no, our team sucks, so it's his fault. You know, it's like, that's not helping anybody. It's same thing with the Jets, you know, you get humiliated at home, or well, for Woody Johnson at home in UK, kind of, and then, you know, you have a top three defense the last five, or not 5 years, however many years Sala was there, and your offense, meanwhile, is very bland, horribly called by Hackett, very poorly run by a 40-year-old quarterback, and your solution is to fire your defensive head coach? Like, it makes no sense.
This is a fake report. 100%. There's no way. This is 100% fake. Yep.
I feel like if it was real at this point.
I feel like at this point it would have been like from Schefter or anything. This is fake.
Yeah.
Bruh.
Like you said though, Robert, this will probably happen sooner than later.
Well, guess what? You just saw us live figure out a reporter being an idiot. There you go.
Yeah.
At bare minimum, you just found that out.
Yeah.
Yeah, I double checked. I was like, this guy said he's a Giants insider. I didn't see any I also
triple checked it. But like, the thing is a lot of people reported on Steinberg stuff before, so I don't know. It's really weird.
I know. It definitely is, cuz I literally when I said, "Oh yeah, I think I know the guy. I think he's a trusted source." Like, because he looks very familiar to, like, one of the guys I thought I knew in the tri-state area of media, but apparently I just did some Google searching, and it's a comedy troll account, so it's not real.
But that being said, it's weird, because I know we reported on his stuff before, so it's weird. But that said,
and the fact that we all kind of believed it just shows, you know,
just shows how bad it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I'm trying to see what gives it away. Because remember the one I sent you guys about remember the other guy I sent you, like the guy claiming like that young reporter that was like, oh yeah, I'm hearing like it was something baseball related about like Juan Soto or not Juan Soto or something like that. Remember I sent that like a couple, it was like a month ago or so. I sent a thing about like this young reporter, like it was like he I could tell because the spelling in his post gave it away. Like there was a spelling error or a grammatical error in his post.
If nothing else, this is great show content. Just to talk about how bad some of these bad reporters are, that we can tell in 5 minutes if something's fake or not. Like, it's pretty damn good.
Crap, I got trolled again.
Well, no, I don't think that is the case, Will, because as Shane said, like, the fact that we all believed it is funny. Like, in the sense that, like, it is so bad that it makes sense.
Like, yeah, we all believed it because it's totally in the realm of possibility, considering this franchise.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, that's what I hate, too, is, like, if it's any other team, we would kind of, I think we would know more or less right away it's fake, but because it's the Giants, it's like, Jesus, man, it's like, it's
yeah.
So
yeah,
bad.
That's how I view it. It's like, yeah, like, I think it's really funny that we figured that out live on the show, though.
Yeah, but I mean, hell, even that's the first time I've ever been that fooled by it. Like, I was like, oh, that's got to be real, and I'm like, wait a minute, because I'm just like, he looked like that guy. The thing is, too, and it's such a name.
I'm
that's
sure
such a New York, New Jersey, like media name. That's why I was like, it's got to be real, because I'm like.
Well, also, at the same time, I'm sure we've reported on some of his stuff before.
I don't think we have. I don't think so.
But anyway.
Oh, we'll see. Okay, this is how you can... Oh, this is why. If you just go back through a couple of his tweets, like, saying, Devin, quote-unquote, Motor, Singletary, huge TD to cut the lead to 23. Like, you know, it's clearly a troll. And it says, hashtag Giants GM Joe Shane is a disgrace. Like, no media member would actually tweet like that.
Oh, absolutely.
So that's
not.
Why.
Yeah.
But also, I have a question. I have a question about this, though, like, as a whole. Why do these accounts, like, what's the purpose of these accounts from an NFL perspective? Like,
those are the ones, these are the ones I'm like, you know. Not for nothing, and we're gonna get into like a, you know, to like, you know, Elon Musk territory here. But Elon Musk talks about, you know, free speech and stuff, and I get it. But and the thing is, I'm not saying you should ban these accounts, but you know what you should do? Immediately put a community note on it. Like, immediately find someone that can see big shit from a mile away.
Also, I hate that. That's one of the things that I hate about the verification stuff, because the fact that someone can be verified just by paying, it's like, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But,
let's talk about football, shall we?
Yes, let's do so. So, Brandon, I want to finish off with what you're talking about with this Eagles defense, because I think it's really important to just focus on what this team, like, what these rookies have done, because it's something really unprecedented in this league. Two rookies coming in at the cornerback position and doing what they're doing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and they just playing incredible football. I mean tonight, like, it's funny how tonight it was like Quinion Mitchell's worst game. I mean, he gave up that last TD. It's a garbage time TD, so it doesn't really count. But it's gonna go against his record. I mean, he shouldn't have been out there for that TD anyway, but regardless. But tonight was, like, his worst game. He gave, like, it was, like, four catches for, like, 30-something yards, and that's his worst game this season. Like, Quinion Mitchell, and he was covering literally every single receiver at some point. He was covering Coop at one point, Puka at another, Tutu Atwell at another. So eventually those guys were going to get their catches anyway. So the fact that no matter where he went, they weren't even – Matt Stafford was not even throwing at him at all tonight. Shows you how sticky of a guy he is in that secondary, and B, just how well he's played. You know, when a veteran quarterback who's won a ring, who you can make a case for a Hall of Fame, who I think is a whole, we think is a Hall of Famer, I would think, who will not target a rookie corner because he's that worried about him, is, it speaks a lot. It speaks volumes. And then the fact that he wouldn't even, half the time, he wouldn't even throw, tonight, really, the only place where Matt Stafford was throwing the ball was anywhere where Darius Slay / Isaiah Rodgers was, because those guys were getting torched. But Cooper DeJean, like glue. Quinion Mitchell, like glue. Those guys were stuck on their men pretty much all night. Cooper DeJean had a couple breakups. Quinion Mitchell had a couple, I think, one or two pass breakups. Like, you know, they're not getting the picks like they should, but the thing is, they don't need to. That a good corner doesn't need to get interceptions. Like, interceptions are an overblown stat. That's why Trayvon Diggs sucks. That guy sucks. So, plain and simple.
Thank you.
Yeah, you can lead the league in picks, but you can also lead the league in getting burned for TDs, which he has. So, it's like, yeah, that doesn't matter. To me, what matters the most is basically how many yards are you giving up when someone's on you? You know, what's your catches and yards look like against you? And how many TDs do you give up? How much do you get burnt? And also, how many penalties do you commit? And Quinion Mitchell doesn't do any of that. He doesn't get burnt. He doesn't commit. And the thing is, Cooper DeJean, too. They don't get burnt. Don't commit penalties. They're stuck to their receivers like glue. I think, like, the biggest game, like I said, tonight, I think was the biggest game that any receiver had. But that's because the Rams have three or four great, you know, they have literally a wide receiver, one, a two, a three, and a four that can beat you. No other team has that. So it's just the Rams. So you're not going to see a game like, and the thing is, they still dominated. Outside of the garbage time TD, they gave up 14 points. And really, if you want to even, I don't want to complain about the refs, but the refs gifted them a free touchdown. So okay. Really, you only gave them two of them.
The referees in this game, this is Lan Clark's officiating crew. This is one of the most experienced officiating crews in the league, I think, by years, from what I remember. At least this year's crew. That was the worst officiated game of the season. I think by a mile. From bad calls on almost every possession to the, let's see, to that fourth down and three that they changed to a third down and 13 because they're like, oh, I didn't mean to do that and I want to change it. Like, no, you can't. And the competition committee is going to do something about that because,
yeah,
I mean, they 100% are, but it was unbelievably bad and it's unacceptable. But again, we talk about this every week. There's always a game or two that does that, and it's awful. Yeah.
And the thing is, it didn't stop the better team from winning tonight. So, you know, it's one thing when you're the better team and you're getting consistently screwed, and it's like, but when you're the better team and you can still win by 17, well, really by 23, because you don't count that last really TD for nothing. So when you can beat a team by 23 and dominate them and still overcome a couple bad calls, that's the sign of a great football team.
Yeah.
So.
And you know what? This Eagles game kind of brings us into a good transition, Shane, into what the Seahawks are not doing offensively with that offensive line. Because when we're talking about Saquon, and this is what happened with the Giants as well, we're talking about a difference between a great O-line, a top three O-line in the league, hell, maybe the best in the entire league in the Eagles, versus one of the worst in Seattle that continues to kind of rear its ugly head there.
Yeah, you know, and it sure does continue to be a problem there. You know, they have, I think we all know that offensively, Seattle is fairly talented. I mean, they've got, you know, three pretty solid receivers, two decent backs, a quarterback who is pretty up and down, but, you know, he definitely can have his moments where he shines. It's just hard to, and what I was saying earlier is, you know, it's hard to gauge this offense and kind of make an opinion on how Ryan Grubb, the offensive coordinator, is doing, because there's never any, the play never has any time to develop. So I'm like, well, you know, a lot of people are saying, oh yeah, Grubb, you know, he's not good and whatever. And I'm like, well, I mean, he maybe not, I don't know, but I feel like we haven't really seen his full potential yet, because he's being held back by his offensive line. But yeah, but I tell you what though, the Seattle defense is finally looking like how we thought they would. You know, it's, I mean, Arizona's had one of the better offenses all year, and you know, they only scored 6 today. So I mean, yeah, this was definitely a statement game by Seattle. And I think I was telling you guys this earlier, I think a big piece of it is the linebacker situation. You know, something was obviously off with the defense, particularly the run defense, early on in the season for Seattle. And, you know, they got originally their inside linebackers, who in a 3-4 scheme like this, they're the ones that are, you know, responsible for the most of the work in the run defense. Well, at first that was Jerome Baker and Terrell Dotson. They are now gone. And now you have Knight and Ernst Jones, who one's a rookie and the other obviously the free agent from Tennessee, formerly from LA. And like, I don't think they allowed more than 50 yards on the ground.
Yeah. And, yeah. James Conner did nothing today at all.
Yeah. And this is with, you know, a team that has, yeah, they had 49 rushing yards on 14 attempts. And this is a team that has Kyler Murray, an amazing running quarterback, James Conner, a really good running back, you know. So yeah, it's, I think those two are really the difference that they needed, because now they've gone back-to-back weeks with pretty good offenses. I mean, you know, granted, 49ers are a little bit banged up right now, but they, you know, they had Purdy last week, and CMC was fully on, healthy and going for the most part. So, you know, we've got back-to-back weeks now of them making a statement on defense. I think it's a good sign for them. They just need to figure out the offensive line, something, anything. You know, it's because a lot of people are saying, oh, Geno, he sucks. And, I mean,
he's
great.
He's
no,
not
but
good. He's not good, Shane. Like, he's not good.
He's not, but he's not the problem in Seattle.
I'm not, Shane, I'm not saying he's the, I'm not saying he's the problem, but these interceptions are stupid in the red zone. Yeah. Like, in the red zone, in crucial moments, it's every week, man. It's not okay.
No, I agree, but here's the thing. Everybody's saying, oh, put in Howell. Okay, well,
Hal wouldn't make it much better. I'm not saying that either.
No, that's the thing. That's what annoys me, is because everybody's saying, oh, if you put in Howell, it'll just fix everything. It's like, no, nothing's going to change if you put Howell in. He throws just as many interceptions, if not more, than Geno. So that's not the solution right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's, I think the immediate problem is the offensive line. Then, like, you know, in the off season, then we can start addressing the quarterback situation. Because, quite frankly, I don't know if their solution at quarterback is in the building right now. I think they think it is, but, or we think it is, but I don't know.
Yeah, and you know, Will, I think it's a key point what Shane says there is that the quarterback situation is probably not going to be solved in the building right now. Do you kind of feel the same way?
Yeah, honestly, I know they. I heard they signed a quarterback to the practice squad, but I think that's just something they were thinking about as far as a backup, and then they're probably going to either draft their starter or find something offseason, because there's gonna be a lot of people that wants to unload their quarterbacks. Like, honestly, I will avoid Daniel Jones. I'm not gonna touch Daniel Jones ever. But honestly, I would actually pick the guy. I would actually pick somebody. Well, I think it might be controversial. I'm not sure if he's going to. If Seattle might think about getting him, but I would actually think about if they're going to not re-sign him. I would think about signing Justin Fields to a contract, because I think he's pretty good. He got it. He got a leg.
Nah.
But I don't know. I think he's pretty good though. Honestly, like,
I just don't think it's a fit.
I don't know. I think
it's a good fit for Seattle.
Brandon, what do you think? Do you think that's a fit? Do you think Fields is a fit for Seattle?
I mean, Justin Fields, the thing is, in Seattle's offense, you've got to be able to throw. And Justin Fields is, I mean, to me, Justin Fields, he's thrown a little bit better this year when he has started. But, I mean, I can't see it. I don't. Because you know what made Russell Wilson great? Russell Wilson could throw and could run. Justin Fields can only run. And then Geno can kind of do a little. I mean, he can run a little bit, but he can also throw, even though he's not great. Like, Justin Fields to me is kind of remember how we're doing the kind of the thing we did last week when we're ranking teams, like, oh, did they evolve, devolve, or stay the same? It's like, to me, if you go from Geno Smith to somebody like Justin Fields, it feels like a slight devolve. I like Justin Fields. I like his legs. I like the fact that he can use them to pick up first downs. But the thing is, even the Steelers at this point are using him as a gadget guy. They're not telling him to go throw the ball.
Yeah.
And because he can't. So, like, you know, at this point, I mean, he wasn't really throwing the ball well when he was winning games. I mean, he was still winning games, but it's mostly because he was just getting crucial yards with his legs, and then the defense was getting stops.
Brandon, so, I actually have some actual breaking news for you, sadly.
Okay.
Brandon Graham tore his tricep. He's out for the year.
Oh no.
That is scary.
The good thing is we do have a lot of good depth. So
that's true.
Yeah.
It's not the biggest.
Yeah, you need Reddit back. Yikes. You know what else is yikes, Brandon? And this is something that you have kind of kept going on. You're starting to worry about the Kansas City Chiefs after today. You're not there yet.
Me too.
Yeah. Well, tell us why, Shane, because we're on the same page. So I think we're gonna say the same thing.
No, I talked enough about the Seahawks. You go ahead.
I mean, the best question to ask is, where do I begin?
Begin with the fact that they basically lost a game to the Panthers. Like, I mean, like, that crucially, they at points felt like they should have dominated the game, particularly in the second quarter, and then it was just dead. Like, the team just died, like, for so many, like, moments of that game.
They were up at one point, what was it, by like two scores or almost three scores? And the Panthers literally almost stole the game from you at the end. I mean, you can't let any team hang around. Like, letting the Panthers hang around, forget the fact that this was a tied game and then whatever, and you won off the last second field goal. The fact that you let the Panthers hang around in general in this game is concerning. You don't let an awful football team hang around if you're the Chiefs. You shouldn't. And the thing is, this is another, once again, like we've been saying, you know, the whole year, this is another one-score game. The only thing that that's holding me back from saying, oh yeah, one score game, this team is not as good as we think they are, is because it's the Chiefs. But you can't ignore it, though. It's another one score game, and this was a bad team they played today, and you barely beat them. You made Bryce Young look competent. I mean, you really, you got to do better than that. I mean, especially against a good, this is a good Kansas City defense, and you let Bryce Young and the Panthers hang 27 on you, that's a problem. It's hard for me to look at the Chiefs and think they're going to do it again. Like, they're going to go on this run again and just win another Super Bowl, because I'm like, it's the whole one-score game rule doesn't work out well. It never has for any team in the NFL and throughout history. So it's – but the problem is, like I'm saying, is like you get in that mindset where you're just like, well, if any team can do it, it's the Kansas City Chiefs. So
exactly.
It's one of those things where I feel like I'm in limbo with them, where it's like, of course I want to hate on them, because God, you know, when the Chiefs lose, America wins. But
with any dynasty, right?
But that's how. Yeah, exactly. But it's like, but at the same time, I'm just like, you know, man, like I look at it, and I'm like, they can't keep getting away with this, can they? And they do every week. And the thing is, if there's anybody you want to trust in a one-score game, you trust a guy like Patrick Mahomes. You trust Andy Reid. You trust a team that's built to win any kind of game, whether it's a blowout or it's a one-score game or it's a last-second field goal. I mean, now, the only thing that concerns me is if they get into a real kind of defensive game, they got to kick field goals. They don't. I mean, Harrison Butker's a great kicker. I mean, their kicker didn't make you know, pretty much a game winner today. But
yeah, and Trader's a good stopgap for 4 weeks.
Yeah, but the thing is, if they get into a real defensive game against some team, that's what I'm gonna worry, because I don't think he's a kicker built for big moments. I mean, obviously he hasn't really kicked. So if you're gonna ask him to kick 50 plus a game, you know, you might run into trouble there. But I look, you know, Kareem Hunt, I mean, for what he is, he's done well enough in this offense this year. I mean, not anything, you know, earth-shattering, but well enough, sustainable. I mean, all their running backs kind of taking their turn with Pacheco out. You know, DeAndre Hopkins, I mean, he caught a TD today. So, you know, that's another one that he can kind of deposit in the bank. Like, hey, you know, I'm playing, you know, decent in these last, you know, few games since coming to KC. Mahomes did have a good statistical day. So that's a plus. I just think, you know, it's like, it's crazy. In the one, a lot of teams that play these one score games, right? We look at it and we're like, oh, well, statistically, they're not great. The problem is the Chiefs are winning games, one score games, but statistically, well, really outside of Mahomes' turnovers, they kind of have been, you know, it seems like, it feels like dominating games or kind of, you know, playing well enough to win, like to actually be, you know, win and not blow a one score game. It's like, but you just want to believe in the back of your mind that it's going to hurt them eventually. And I think it will. It's just that I'm not ready to commit to saying it will, because it's the Kansas City Chiefs. So that's where I'm at with it.
But before I go to Shane on this, Will, where are you at with the Chiefs? Are you in limbo? Are you in a lukewarm state with them after today? Or are you hitting the panic button a little bit?
Well, I'm still having a lukewarm a little bit, but honestly, this is the regular season, and I know they're going to get to the playoffs, and we already know with the Chiefs in the playoffs, you know, they're going to be different, a different type of team, so honestly, I'm not really that much panic about them, because we've been through this before last year, so honestly, this is going to be the same thing, and they're going to somehow get to the Super Bowl, so I'm not really that much concerned for the Chiefs.
Can you go ahead and speak your piece on this?
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, no matter how bad they look, you can't. I don't feel like I can count them out, because this is what happens every year. Or not every year, but this year and last year, where they look. Not very good in the regular season, and then somehow in the playoffs they just find this second gear and win it all. So I, not that they're going to win it all this year, but I'm just saying it's like, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if that happened, if they got to, well, I mean, of course they're going to get to the playoffs, but when they get there and if all of a sudden it's like, oh, hey, we're here, you know, but we'll see. We will see.
And then when we look at another team that we kind of felt was a contender going into the year, Will, I'll start with you here. The Texans losing to the Titans. You might want to push the panic button a little bit harder there. CJ Stroud not playing as well as he did last year. That sophomore slump, as we've talked about before. It's getting scary over there.
Yeah, honestly, I don't know what's going on with this Texans team. At first, CJ Stroud in his rookie year, he broke out. I know, you know, it was just his rookie year, but he has something special as far as his first year of the season. Then when it comes to sophomore season, looks like some of the concerns has come in full circle. Now it looks like we got a little bit concerns as far as a sophomore slump, and it's bad. Like at the first, like the beginning, like CJ Stroud wasn't bad, but wasn't good either. And I think with this game, this is arguably his worst game. One of them is worst game, but honestly, it was bad, and it was bad. Honestly, especially versus a team like the Titans, and then it capped off with basically running out the end zone, like Dan Orlowski, what he did when he was with the Lions. So it's a bad loss. Even I remember D'Amico Ryan's even reacted to it. You know, his face says it all. And man, I remember at first Texans on paper they looked like a contender, and there was a lot of hype from the Texans. But man, that was just basically, you know, gone. But, you know, despite some of the injuries, still the performance is just not there, especially on the offensive side of the ball.
You know, their entire offense, Brandon, and you've said this, you know, in bits and pieces in previous weeks, and now the alarm bells are definitely sounding in Houston. Joe Mixon has been their entire offense all season, and it reared its ugly head today.
Yeah. You know, how many times do we say every year, you know, you need a great running game? But the thing is, you need both parts of the offense. You can't just have just a running game or just a passing game. You have to have both in this league to succeed. And right now, the Texans just don't. I mean, CJ Stroud is he's not having a great year. I mean, the numbers might say he's having a decent season, but for what he did last year compared to this year, he's having a bad season. And a lot of that is injuries. A lot of that is just, and a lot of that, but a lot of that is just poor play on his part, just missing throws, bad throws, you know, overthrows, underthrows, all these different kinds of things, you know, not making the right read. A lot of different things that go into that. I mean, second year, and the thing is too, in your second year, and this is why a lot of quarterbacks go through a sophomore slump, is, you know, the league has tape on you now. They know how to play you better now. You have to adjust, and CJ Stroud hasn't done that. But that offense, yeah, you can't just run. Like, listen, Joe Mixon's an important part of the offense. That's why he's there, but you can't run this offense strictly through Joe Mixon. And now teams are figuring out, hey, CJ Stroud can't do anything now. And now they're just relying on Joe heavily. So now all we got to do is stop the run and we beat them. And right now, that's how they're getting beat. At least that's what it seems like from my vantage point. So and I said it all season long so far. I've said it even since, basically week two at this point. I said, this Texans team just does not look the same. They don't look the same offensively, and they really don't even look the same defensively. Like they're getting gashed by teams they shouldn't be getting beat by. Like the Titans should not hang 32 on you. Like that cannot happen. You know, you're making Will Levis look a competent quarterback, and he's not. So I like
another meme from Will Levis today. That's pretty much his season so far.
Like, it doesn't, it just doesn't make sense. And the thing is, too, that we talk about, like the Texans' defense coming into the season, we thought, hey, you know, maybe they can be. And the crazy thing, they seem like they're an exception to the rule of having that deep, like, you know, like we were talking about last year, you know, usually a defensive coach has a good defense. DeMeco Ryan's a defensive coach. That defense isn't great. They're middle of the pack at best when they're on this season. When they're off, they play like a bottom 10 defense. And I mean, today was another kind of performance. It was like, yeah, it looked like a bottom 10 defense. So, and especially against a bad QB. So I keep, you know, thinking the Texans, because I mean, they're going to still win their division. There's no way they don't, because I mean, that division's so bad. They're going to end up being probably the fourth seed in the AFC, but I just can't see. I can't see them if they play a really good team in the first round in the wild card. I don't know if they can win at this point. I mean, talent wise they should, but I don't know if they could, because they've had such an up and down and really mostly down season compared to last year that I just can't see them making a ton of noise. I can't see them being like last year. They seemed like they were that, oh, they were that surprise, or they were that little engine that could, it felt like. And they got stronger as the weeks went on. But this year, it feels like every week they're almost either middling and they're just staying the same, or they're kind of just taking slight steps back. And it's really rearing its ugly head as the weeks pile up here. So I don't know what, you know, just like the Chiefs, like, you know, like I don't want to rule the Texans out of anything just because it's, you know, CJ Stroud's proven that he can win in this league and can win a playoff game and can, you know, carry a team to success. But I think it's just too much inconsistent play to be sustainable enough to make a decent run at a Super Bowl. And it's like, you know, they'll win their division. That's great. But with how bad it is, you're supposed to win that division. Like, that's not what you're here for. At year two, you know, you won a playoff game last year. Your goal, I think, for this season is to make an AFC championship game. And right now, the Ravens are better than you. The Bills are better than you. Kansas City is better than you. Like, the three teams you're really chasing, they're not just better than you. I think they're far better than you. So,
it's like, argue the Chargers and Broncos are better than them.
I don't hate that take at all. I really don't.
I mean, it's true because the Chargers are on offense. You know, they're not scoring. They're not shooting lights out on offense, but they're scoring when they have to, when they really need to. And their defense is playing phenomenal. Their defense is playing like a top 10 defense. And then on top of that, the Broncos, we know they have a top 5 defense. That's who they are. That's who the Broncos' identity is. But the thing is, before, the Broncos were just a top 5 defense with no offense. Now they're a top 5 defense that could score 30 plus on offense every week. So it's like, if you think about it, there's 5 teams at least in the AFC that are better than you, and you are slowly kind of losing ground to those teams every week because now those teams are chasing you. I mean, you know, you're going to win a division, so you're not going to be at a wild card spot, but I mean, they shouldn't because Indy is so bad, but I mean, you're going to have a team, let's say they win a division, you're going to face a team in the wild card that probably has a better record than you, that's probably better than you and can beat you and probably will beat you if you continue to play this way. So I think the Texans, I don't want to count them out, but I definitely think they are in more trouble than the Kansas City Chiefs are. And I don't think that's not hard to see. The Texans are definitely in trouble going forward.
And then,
yeah, I mean,
go ahead, Shane.
I don't, you know, struggling to score against the Titans to me isn't the end of the world because that's not like an awful defense and it's a division rival. So like, yeah, it makes sense. But yeah, like you said, letting them score 30 plus on you, come on. That's pretty bad. Yeah, it's just weird because, you know, with Houston, they had, you know, kind of this great season last year where they were on the rise and everything. And like Will said, on paper, they got a lot better. But, you know, but that's not, obviously not everything. And, I mean, we're seeing that firsthand right now. So, yeah, this is I don't know. That being said, I don't know what the issue is. Because it's obviously, I don't know. Or maybe last year they just caught lightning in a bottle and got lucky. You never know.
And speaking of lightning in a bottle, well, not entirely lightning in a bottle, an important offensive coordinator change. The Chicago Bears without Shane Waldron. Shane, Caleb Williams making some nasty throws. This offense is a lot better, even in a loss. What a surprise.
Yeah. I mean, still not great, but at least now it feels like they have a pulse. Like, you know, yeah, it's, you know, my thought on Caleb, I was like, you know, he's got all the, and I said this pre and post draft and whatever else, it's like, he's got the talent. It's just putting it together. And he doesn't have the right coaching staff currently. Well, that might change now. You know, we'll see, because now that guy is gone, and hopefully the head coach is soon to follow. But yeah, so, you know, it's a good sign if you're a Chicago fan.
Yeah, it definitely is. He made some really impressive throws today. It was fun to watch. Can't believe I'm saying the Bears were fun to watch, but they definitely are. What's not been fun to watch, Will, and you know, Brandon and I have talked about this at length over the last week, but I want to get your take on this, Will. The kicking game. Cowboys Commanders, right? We have this crazy matchup, but it all seems to come down to the kickers at the end of it all, Will, and it rears its ugly head again for Washington.
How many times do we say rears its ugly head on this pod every week?
A lot. Which we'll get to.
Mostly you two, but...
Well, mostly me, because yeah. I'll be honest, there's a lot of rear its ugly head teams in this league. We list them all out last week, but go ahead, Will.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a weird game, honestly. You know, honestly, it actually was more shocking, honestly, with the Cowboys on that side. I kind of understand, but the Commanders side, it was definitely disappointing. But yeah, it's the kicking. It was mostly been pretty bad. I know there was like one kick, especially the PAT, that the holder was shaking a bit, and then it messed up the kick and it went far. I believe was far left, and then it was bad. It was bad, and especially with some of this kicking, especially throughout the league, it's. Especially from Justin Tucker, it's like some of these are like easy trick shot, like, you know, got your like 40, 30 yarders, you got your 20s, like those are the most easiest ones, and they're missing it. You know, sometimes it's the holding, the placement is always a big deal. That was the biggest thing, but lately it's just been maybe the pressure of the. Of the inaccuracy or the pressure online, especially if a kick helps seals the game or put them in the lead for the final minute. And honestly, it's been bad. And especially with this kick, especially in this Commanders and Cowboys game, they haven't been hitting their targets. So yes, it's been a very, very bad, game, especially for kicking with in this game, especially for all season, and surprisingly from arguably the best kicker and future Hall of Famer Justin Tucker. So it's been a bad season for kickers.
Shane, what's your perspective on a really horrible kicking season?
Yeah, something I've noticed. And this isn't just kicking, this is, you know, special teams in general, is that a lot of the new coaches, and when I say new, I mean, you know, younger guys like in their 30s, 40s. They don't really seem to care about special teams, which, you know, I get it because it's, you know, you want to, it's always an offensive or a defensive guy and you want to focus on those sides of the ball because that's what, you know, that's where the plays happen. But it's, there are ultimately three phases to the game. So, you know, you look at some older coaches, like, for instance, Bill Belichick, special teams were always super tight, buttoned up, and it was never an issue. They never cost him games, nothing. Now, you know, you look at, I mean, just look at the disaster that has been special teams this year, but, you know, look at, like, the Super Bowl. You know, I would argue San Francisco lost that, or really Kansas City won that game in special teams. And of course there were some other things like the decision to receive the overtime ball, which, you know, was a whole other conversation. But in general, there were a lot of key moments throughout that game that came from special teams where Kansas City was able to capitalize and San Francisco did not, because it just is kind of like an afterthought for them. So, you know, I think unfortunately we're going to start seeing this more and more as time goes on, because in this new age of coaching, it's just kind of a, like I said, kind of an afterthought, it seems like.
And you know what it is too? You know who has the, basically, I think it's like not just, I don't know if it's statistically, but I mean, most people agree upon it. You know who has the best off special teams unit in football right now?
Who?
Pittsburgh Steelers.
I kind of figure that.
Yeah, Mike Tomlin.
See that coach all the time on the sideline. They always showed him.
The most energetic special teams guy ever works on fundamentals. Right, Brandon? Works on fundamentals. It's energetic. What you expect from a special teams guy, right? An energetic guy, but a guy that preaches fundamentals. And that's been the Steelers special teams this season.
Yeah. It's like the old adage, right? That's like, you know, the team that makes less mistakes wins. That's not just offensively, like, not turning the ball over or defensively, you know, like, getting stops. It means the special teams. It means, like, don't muff a punt. You know, actually make your kicks. You know, if you're a punter, don't shank, or don't get it blocked. Like, your protection has to be on point on those kinds of plays and things like that too. And it's like, when you don't do the little details well, you're not going to do the bigger ones well. So when you don't have, if you don't have a good special teams, it's gonna make the problems that you do run into throughout a season worse. It's gonna make your offensive struggles seem worse. It's gonna make your defensive struggles seem worse, because, you know, how many times do we see a shanked punt lead to easy points for relatively easy points for another offense? You know, there's so many times where it's like a punt will get blocked, or a kick will get blocked. And I mean, there's been a lot of those this year too, but it's like, That's just protection failures on special teams, and those can lose games. Those are points left on the table, just as much as there's points left on the table by offenses. You know, when they don't score in the red zone, or when they go for a fourth down and they miss when they shouldn't. Same goes for special teams. You don't want to give another team a chance to let their offense go out there and do something against you. And it's like, you know, that's why, like in fantasy sports, right? That's why the defense and special teams kind of gets combined, because your special teams is an extension of your defense. And that's why the Steelers are really good, because not only do they play good defense, they're great on special teams. So their offense doesn't have to do a lot of work to really win. I mean, usually they don't do a lot of work to win games. So it's, if you have a good special teams, you know, it's like the difference between winning and losing a game could be as simple as pinning somebody at the five versus, you're not trusting your kicking game. Like, because how many times we also see this too? A lot of offenses will stand on the field on like a 4th and 2 from like, you know, the 42-yard, you know, something like the 40-yard line, when that should be a kick that a kicker can make from like 50-something yards. I mean, it's not easy, but a kicker should be able to make it, and they won't kick the ball because they don't trust their kicker, or because they know that their special teams isn't great, and it could lose you a game because it could be turnover on downs, and all of a sudden the game's over. So, and you look back at that play, and it's like, oh, that's the reason why. Because A, they don't trust their kicker, or B, they don't trust their punter in a certain situation, or they don't trust their kick coverage team. Because, I mean, that was a problem that Philly ran into, you know, the past couple seasons, was their kick coverage team was one of the worst in football. So we kept giving teams, you know, the ball pretty much to start at like the 45-yard line almost every possession. So when you keep running into those problems, you're not going to have a good football team, because you're going to get behind too much in games, and then you're not going to come back. So your special teams really does, you know, as good as your special teams is, that kind of shows you what your record is going to ultimately be, I feel like. So it's a very important part of the game. It just gets overlooked by far too many coaches, but the best ones are the older ones that value the importance of that. I mean, you know, and usually they have good defenses to boot. So, you know, it's too important. It's too important.
If you want an example of how important special teams is, look up the 2010 Chargers. They had the number one offense, mm-hmm. number one defense, yet they went 9-7 and missed the playoffs because
they had the worst special teams in the league. They literally awful. Had the worst in the league. Yeah, it was so bad. No, but
they
again,
had five blocked punts. You know,
Jesus,
tons of. I mean, I don't remember the exact number, but they had several returns go for touchdowns. Just, you know, fumbled field goal, just sloppy things that cost them games.
You know, that's the example that everyone points to, and rightfully so. But as you said, Shane, the Chiefs in the Super Bowl. Right, we're talking about where the Steelers are at. You know, Brandon, you've talked about how much you don't like their offense, yet look at where they are record-wise, and that a huge part of that is their mm-hmm. special teams. Finishing off, we're talking about rearing its ugly head. This can be called the Rearing Its Ugly Head League, because we kind of talked about this at the beginning of the morning slate, the early window slate, because we kind of knew going in that the early window slate was going to be really, really bad, and it ended up being kind of good towards the end. But Shane, you brought up kind of, you know, we have constantly been a proponent of talking about how this league is in a downturn since the pandemic, or at least since after the pandemic, and you've come up with a few reasons as to why. Because I think, you know, again, the rear its ugly head league, I think that's really apropos to this conversation, as we're talking about just the encapsulation of the difference between the top teams. Right, and obviously some of that is the special teams that we talked about, but the top teams and the bottom teams that are constantly struggling year after year.
Yes, 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 of course. So
there has to be a sigh in the middle. It's that bad. Oh no!
That's how you know this is bad. That's how you know.
So there are several reasons, in my opinion, why the NFL has, you know, gotten worse in recent years, particularly the last 4 years. And, you know, the obvious one that everybody says, oh, you know, Roger Goodell. It's like, yeah, okay, but we know that. Like, that's whatever. I'm talking about specific events or moments in time and the people involved in said moments that created a snowball effect that got us to where we are. Number one, Sean McVay. What did Sean McVay do? He's a great coach. Yes. Yes, he is.
Look at his coaching tree. Done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Incredible coach. However, he did this thing where, you guys probably know what I'm going to say, he would not play any starters in the preseason.
Oh, mm-hmm. There we go. But you would add mm-hmm. the coaching tree in there as well, right, Shane? Like it is the preseason thing, but the coaching tree part of it is bad.
I mean, yeah, there's a little. I mean, well, yeah, it's him and Shanahan too, like with the coaching tree thing. So it's yeah, but I don't know if that's necessarily made the league bad. It's just made it so that the West Coast offense is very normal now, when it used to be kind of a unique thing. So that's not necessarily a good or a bad thing. I think I kind of like stuff like that because then it makes, you know, Detroit with the, or like Shane Steichen, you know, with the deep ball, you know, the playing the vertical game. It kind of makes that like rare and cool now, which I like, you know. But anyways, so why is this a problem? Well, the Stars used to play a lot in the preseason. Not a lot, but like a pretty significant amount. I mean, they'd play in the second and third game at least like half the game. So why that's important is because that gets guys, you know, it's kind of like a, how do I describe it? It gets you more used to what it feels like to get hit again. Because if you know, in preseason, it's not totally 100% with the starters, but it's like 90. So it's good, you know, it's a good kind of ease into it. But now it's like, okay, everybody is week one just being thrown into the deep end. And, you know, I don't think it's a coincidence that since that has happened, the quality of football in September has gone way down.
It's terrible. And it's the worst. It's,
yeah.
September and October, really.
And even October, because, I mean, September has always been kind of, eh, you know, but now it's just like September and October. It's like, what, you know? And why injuries, despite the game being made, quote unquote, much safer, have just gone up and up and up. Because, and I think it's because, you know, it's like a pitcher, okay, you're not going to just show up to the game, not throw at all, and then say, okay, get on the mound.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Brandon, you were a pitcher. I pitched a little bit, not a ton. But I think you and I agree that that would be a recipe for disaster. That's how you get Tommy John's.
Yep. Yeah.
So, you know, it's the same kind of thing. If, you know, if you don't take those reps in the preseason, because especially now, like in practice too, there's a lot less tackling. So, or just contact in general. So you're just going from to 100.
Why are the offensive lines bad? That's why there's not much contact.
Right. Yeah. And well, the offense, so that's reason number one, where we are. Sean McVay. Thanks. Reason number two, speaking of the offensive line, the CBA and just in general, the players union. You know, look, I'm not anti-union. I get it. You know, protect yourself, your employment, whatever. That being said, I think they have negotiated some very questionable things that have not worked in their favor. And as a result, offensive line play is really bad. And which then results in, you know, more quarterbacks and running backs getting injured. And, you know, that's not, it doesn't help the quality of the game in any way. And,
you know, You know what makes me mad about this even more?
What?
Is that so every league had the disaster clause provision in 2020, and including the NFL, where they could change the CBA, and, you know, basically they had to redo the CBA. Every league had to redo the CBA. It got torn apart, you could redo it. the players didn't really do anything during that time in any of the leagues. It was really annoying. And I know we were in a different phase, you know, it was COVID, but that could have been fixed during the COVID era, and it was not. So, gross.
Yeah. reason slash person number three, Jerry Jones, baby.
His battle with the sun continued. He wore shades today.
Yes. Yeah. Great job, Jerry. God. So the reason I say him, and I think there's a few people you could blame on this. One that Will brought up is Kirk Cousins, which also not a bad idea there. Another example would be Christian Kirk. Seems kind of random, but where I'm going with this is guys signing deals, you know, record-breaking deals that are way, way too high.
Mm-hmm.
Because of a bad owner or a bad GM, or sometimes both. And now as a result, the market for that position is just ridiculous. To the point where, since this is a salary cap league, nobody can really afford to keep a ton of good players, which is... I understand that's the point of the salary cap, and I do think it is a good thing ultimately. But the difference is, you know, like in the 2010s, the salary cap just made it so that, you know, the best 7 or 8 teams could keep enough talent so that they could really be competitive, but not too much so that it was like they're unbeatable, you know. Now, however, I feel like we're at a point where, because these contracts, some of these player contracts are so ridiculous, that we're at a point now where it's like you almost can't keep enough guys to, you know, be reliably competitive on a week-to-week basis. I mean, it used to be, you know, 7 or 8 teams in the league where it was like, oh yeah, these are great teams. Now, do we even have a great team this year?
I would argue there are 4 good teams and everyone else, just being, I guess, somewhat fair. I don't have to go into it that deeply, but yeah.
Yeah. But you know what I mean? Like, it's gone way down, because now it's like you can't keep anybody, because anyways. So the reason I bring up those guys is because Jerry Jones and Dak, you know, that was Kirk obviously had, he, you know, he got a pretty high deal when he went to Minnesota. But it wasn't like,
screw that. Look at what happened in Washington. In Washington,
yeah.
In Washington, well, he was going to get $55 million if they franchise tagged him a third time.
Professional bank robber, Kirk Cousins.
Right. The thing is, though, they never signed him to, like, to, you know, a deal where, you know, like a long term extension or whatever, where he was going to be the highest paid quarterback in the league or something by like a crazy amount. But Dak was, you know, he was the first one where it was like, okay, this is a, you know, maybe at the time, probably the 10th, 12th best quarterback in the league, getting paid $40 million a year in this extension, which was way higher than anybody else. So ever since then, it's just been, you know, every quarterback is like, oh, well, I could get 45.
I can get 50. And then it was 50. I can get 60.
Now it's 55, and now it's 60. It's just, it's insane. I mean, it's almost doubled in 4 years. So, you know, and that's when it started. And then, like, Christian Kirk is the same thing for the receiver market. When in 22, I think, or 21, when they signed him $22 million a year, which was, I believe at the time, the highest receiver contract
it was
in the NFL.
Yep, it was.
I was like, for Christian Kirk? I mean, he...
We also the same thing.
I mean, at the time, he was like a low-end 2 or a high 3.
Yep.
Yeah.
And you're giving him that money, which, I mean, first of all, that's just how stupid the Jaguars are. But second...
Do you know who was the head coach when that happened?
Was that Urban Meyer?
Yes!
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Go figure. Anyways, so...
I'm like, ugh!
But you're hot.
Yeah. God.
Poverty.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I was fake coughing that I actually coughed. That's how bad that was. Jesus.
I knew that was going to be bad when he brought in Tim Tebow as a tight end. Anyways. So, yeah. That's. I don't know. It's. I think, you know, it's a combination of those things, you know, players not, well, starters not playing at all in the preseason, the CBA, and then the player, you know, the contract market just getting absolutely ridiculous. I think that's, those are the main reasons why the NFL every year since 2020 is just going down and down and down. Of course there are other things that go into it, you know, some rule changes that are really stupid, you know, and just how, like, pretty much everything is a penalty these days. And, you know, there's some, not gonna say there's anything crooked going on, but there just has been some questionable officiating. Let's just leave it at that.
Hell, it's been like that for 6 years.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, yeah. Anyways. But that's kind of, I mean, that's always sort of been a problem in sports, so that's not really new. And then... Yeah, and then Goodell's whole weird agenda of having games like, you know, on Jupiter and whatever else, just, you know.
games on Jupiter.
And
Are you excited for 8 international games next year, guys?
Ooh,
8
of them. No, done. No.
I've said it before, and I'll say it. Well, and before I say that. You know, and like expanding the season to 17 games, then 18, and then probably 20 eventually. Like, no,
we're looking at like 21 pretty soon here.
Please,
I think.
keep it at 16.
You know what that shows me? That for a league that talks about player safety, you don't give a shit about player safety.
Yep. Thank you. Yep. Yeah.
Thank you.
I think Brandon, that's your add to this list for sure. Is the player safety piece, but. Will, do you have anything more to add to this? Because I know you are very vocal about this conversation as well.
Yeah, honestly, with this, as far as the league goes, what's going on? I don't know. I just feel like, especially with the, on top of what happened with the Jerry and Dak stuff, it turned very badly, because now basically coaches do not really have that much patience, basically looking at like these small sample sizes of like, oh snap, he has this good little game, let's sign him to a big extension. They done with Daniel Jones, they deal with Trevor Lawrence, like they done a lot, and honestly it's sort of pretty weird. We're in this weird stage of just basically giving money to these like mediocre players, even quarterbacks as well. Like we even see in the off season where I remember even last offseason or season before that I remember the Vikings gave John Oliver a big contract, though they already have a starting tight end. Like, they gave him starting money, which is ridiculous. Then yeah, I think it was
Josh Oliver. Yeah, I think Oliver got a pretty substantial contract. Yeah.
And then they gave the Panthers, they gave basically two of their own linemen, our boy, you know, Damian Lewis from, you know, the Seahawks days. They overpaid for him. They overpaid for Hunt from the Dolphins. Like, I don't know. I just feel like some of these GMs and owners, they spend whatever, and they don't have the patience and don't know basically how much they're spending. They're basically like, okay, let me just get this money and just, you know, basically, you know, rights itself. Like, they never, like, go into the thinking mostly. And then now we're just in this era, and all started with Jerry and Dak and also Kirk Cousins.
Yeah, and I'll finish up with you, Brandon. If there's anything more you like to add other than the player safety, go ahead. But this is something that I know you're very, very passionate about, where it seems like the player safety aspect from the turf that we've talked about with the international games, even some of the local games, of course, you being 15 minutes away from MetLife Stadium, you see it every week. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's been something you've been extremely passionate about in terms of kind of where this league is at.
Yeah, I mean, you can't. And, like, you know, and I was also pissed, you know, early on in the season. I mean, we talked about it in week one, two, like the first month of the season. We were like, why do these games suck? You know, no preseason. But, you know, so I get when teams are like, oh, yeah, we want to hold our starters out. You know, player safety, keep them rested, keep them healthy. But they've got to play. But here's the problem. Letting them play in the preseason is and I think that's what plays into this whole player safety thing is, like, because the seasons are expanding, getting longer and longer and longer, and it's like, so now you don't want to play them in the preseason because I'm not only just getting hurt in the preseason, but now because the season's so long, you want to keep them as fresh for as long as possible for later on in the season. But it's a bad, but then you're putting a bad product out for the league for the first about 2 months of the season. The product is awful. And then not only is it awful, but now you're saying you want to expand and keep going and push this to like 20 plus weeks. You cannot claim to be all about player safety and put these players overseas on bad turf, have these stadiums, just like MetLife, with the most god-awful turf in football or in any sport, really. And then you cannot sit there and say you're about player safety when you are pushing these players to play more and more games, taking more and more hits, and piling up more and more injuries. That is not how you are supposed to look at it when you view player safety. Because if you really gave a shit about it, because you don't, if you really cared, you would not be pushing the seat. Like, the only thing the NFL cares about is making more and more money. It's all about the bottom line. And how do they do that? Screw player safety. Screw the thoughts and concerns of the teams, the owners, and the players. No. We're gonna do what's best for us, and you know, if you don't like it, too bad. Then, you know, then you don't play. You know, your team suffers. That's it. Like, it drives me insane. The crazy part is nobody is speaking out enough about it. Certain players are, but we need to sit. Like, the media needs to start hammering this shit home. This is annoying now. This is getting to the point where, you know, I'm fed up watching players in the last week of a season because the season's too damn long. And, you know, some of these teams are still fighting for the playoffs because you're making the season longer. So a team that's fighting for the playoffs in week 18, they're all exhausted. They're all way less. Forget being less than 100% because everybody's less than 100% after, like, you know, five games. But these guys are way less than 100% going into week, you know, 15, 16, you know, well, not really 16, but like 17, 18, these guys are way less than 100%. And you're saying, hey, you're fighting for a division? You're fighting for a playoff spot? Okay, so go the hardest you have all season in an extra game or two and just to get into the position to make the playoffs. So, and it's like, you're putting too much strain
on players, player safety. Like, what's the definition of insanity? Doing the same thing over and over and over again. So when we keep saying every year, they're expanding the game, they're expanding the weeks, they're expanding, you know, these different things. And then the worst part is the rules that you're implementing now are actually making the game more unsafe. Because nobody can tackle this way. Nobody can tackle that way. No one knows what the hell a tackle even is anymore. Because you can't do anything anymore. So it doesn't make sense to me. You know, you're talking about player safety, but it's like players are always going to get hurt. So why would you do things in this league to make those problems worse? Like, it doesn't make sense to, like, there was nothing wrong. Nothing. Like, 14 games way back, you know, 12, 14 games, all you know, what it was back in the day, those were long enough, but they were also playing with leather helmets. They couldn't afford to play, you know, more than that. They'd be dead. But the modern game, we played a 16-game schedule for the longest time. There was nothing wrong with it. Not a damn thing was wrong with that schedule. There was no reason to push this any further. And now that we're thinking about pushing this an extra, basically from 16, now we're up to 17, 18. We're going to push this up to 20 and probably in the next couple seasons. God forbid, I hope we don't. But, you know, the NFL doesn't give a shit about what we think.
Sooner rather than later is money. What we've been hearing. Sooner, money. Thank you, yeah. Will. Money. Money.
Yeah, and then also I was thinking about if they could arguably try to make this much better. I think that you could push Thursday night and axe Thursday night and just basically do, we have Monday night and Sunday night football. And I think the only time you could play Thursday night.
Give me,
like,
Friday.
Give me Friday. Yeah,
Friday. Give me Friday. Like,
and then,
something.
And then just do Thursday, like, you know, on, like, those Thanksgiving games. That's the only thing I think Thursday could be good for.
You know what's funny? I like Friday football. What? Friday's better for everybody.
Yeah.
But they can't do it because of Congress. Oh.
Yeah. Like, it's there.
Plus, nobody would watch it in the South because they're all at high school games.
Exactly.
I don't
yeah,
care.
That's another problem. Is that
I don't care.
Yeah, you.
I know, but I'm saying they would never do it because they would take a huge revenue hit.
Yeah, high school football would not be the same. And yeah, then the NFL also. The NFL, high school football means too much in the South. The NFL would not get as many views on Friday as it does on Thursday. But it's just all these things that we're talking about and why we're pissed at the way the league is. It's the league doesn't care about how any of us feel, how any of us look at the sport that we love to watch. It's like, you know, we you know, we always keep saying we want to be entertained, right? You know, and the NFL is like, oh yeah, we're going to do our best to entertain our fans and keep them happy. But that's the bull crap they're feeding you. They're not doing that. They're not doing it to benefit us. They're doing it to benefit them. That's what the NFL is. That's what Goodell wants. That's what the whole, you know, the board wants. All these different things. It's what they want. It's not about what the fans don't matter. At the end of the day, the fans don't matter because fans will be in the seats regardless. So
yeah,
it's annoying. Like, you know, when people post, like, those memes, like, you know, oh, what happened to the sport I love, when talking about, like, any sport, you know, that has controversy, and it's like, oh, what happened to the game I love? It's like, no, legitimately, we're going to get to a point. And the thing is, we have been getting to a point, especially over the last 5, 6, 7 years, where it truly is like, what happened to the game I love? Between penalties, bad officiating, not having players play the preseason when they should, and that's why they're getting hurt a lot more and a lot more often. And putting them in bad situations overseas on bad turf, you know, making the season longer. All these things are bad. They're not good things for the league. They're good things for their money, for their bottom line, but they're not good things for the fans. They're not good things for the players, coaches, the owners. And the thing is, the owners too have some blame, have a part in this because they vote on this crap. They vote on this.
That's the thing that frustrates me. The players aren't voting on it. The people who are actually playing those 18 weeks, the owners are.
Yeah, and the players should be the ones having the first say, I feel like.
at this point.
And a lot of the, and a lot of that goes on the Players Association. They don't put enough to get a seat on the table. It's a big issue.
Yeah, no.
Bad. It's bad.
Yeah, not to mention. I mean, there's like the there's the turf situation, obviously, but you know, also in certain cases, like Mexico City, or you know, it's like, yeah, let's send a large group of wealthy American guys to an underdeveloped country with super high crime and theft rates. Like, yeah, great idea.
Okay.
Like
AJ Brown, and Brandon, you can vouch for this. AJ Brown said in one of his pressers before going to Brazil, he's like, we got this like, which they always do this, that we got this like, hey, here's the, you know, be careful prevention meeting, which happens every time they do international games in these underdeveloped countries. And AJ Brown's like, I'm too scared to even leave my hotel room. That's not okay.
Yeah,
that's not okay.
That? Player safety.
That's not okay. Yeah, it's bad. It's bad. It's really bad. And I'm glad we're talking about this. What I'm also glad we're talking about, well, more specifically, Brandon, is we're talking about the movie Gladiator. The first one from 2000.
Are you not entertained?
Are you not entertained? Are you not
entertained? That's me all night long.
But before, normally I go to Shane on these. And Will, have you seen this movie before, Will?
Gotta give him a second.
Like that as a maybe.
I don't think I've seen the first one yet.
Okay, no worries here. But let me ask you, like, what are some of these, like, very strong, like, action movies, like, old-school violent movies that you've seen in the past? Because I think it's actually a good starting point.
Yeah, I remember the, I think BC 100 or 200, I forgot what it's called. It's called BC something. And I've seen, I've seen a lot of them. The Spartan ones, I saw some of the Japan ones. I remember some of them, but my memory's a little bit blank. I think the most violent movie I've seen that's recent is arguably John Wick, but that's more of the modern violent. But yeah, the old school one, like there has been a lot of them, and I'll see this Gladiator one. It's a highly anticipated movie and a lot of violence, and I got my boy Denzel Washington in there. So yeah, honestly, I like these type of Gladiator type movies, especially a lot of gore.
Yeah, definitely, and it's a good starting point for you, Brandon. I think because the thing that kind of sits with me with this movie, and I think you would agree, is the fact that it really changed the scope of, like, this kind of movie, right? You look at movies like The Northman that came out recently, right? As I think a pretty apt example. But the storyline of these movies, right, are very similar, very kind of straightforward. But to me, it's this movie that pioneered this culture of movies, this idea of, hey, let's tell these stories about, you know, BC and, you know, where, you know, guns weren't a thing and we're fighting with bows and arrows and all these things. But to me, it was this movie that pioneered that storytelling. And honestly, it's a movie from 2000, right? It's not a movie from 1980. It's not a movie from 1999. It's a movie from 2000. But it pioneered the next 20 some odd years of cinema that we've seen this kind of rise in this culture of this kind of film, and I think that's where it really stands out.
Yeah, and I mean the one of the best, you know, a lot of movies like this. I mean, when you look at a lot of movies like that, it's like, you know, who's the best at directing movies like this? It's Ridley Scott. Ridley Scott is the best at kind of, you know, really kind of making movies seem like grittier than what they are, giving a little bit of like an uneasiness, you know, really kind of really like helping you sink into a movie and feel the moments of a movie, whether that's him doing Alien or Gladiator or even the recent with Joaquin Phoenix Napoleon. You know, even, you know, certain moments, like, you know, his movies, like, you know, I mean, this one had a lot of sound, but like sound, like the soundscape of his movies is also very important. Well, you know, to invoke certain emotions, like, just the way that he goes about doing his movies, at least from the movies I've seen of his, it's like, you know, Alien wasn't like this. It was different. It was a different time period. But this movie was the one that, like we were just saying, it set the standard for a lot of movies that have come out since that have kind of been in the same kind of vein, a similar kind of directing style, similar kind of atmospheric, you know, like, you know, like the look and landscape of movies. You know, it's just every time I see a movie that looks or that has kind of a feel like this, I always go back to this, whether that is the Northman or something like the Lighthouse that came out a couple years ago.
I also thought about The Woman King a little bit, very similar aesthetic style.
Yeah. In certain ways, The Green Knight, the A24 movie, that kind of has some similar aspects to this. Not just being from a different, you know, from a way different time period, but also just kind of the way certain shots were done, and the way like certain things kind of, you know, certain not otherworldly, what's the word I'm looking for? Like spiritual aspects of the movie were done. So, you know, supernatural. That's what I'm looking for. You know, a lot of those spiritual, supernatural kind of things, because there's elements of that in this movie, obviously, with the whole Kingdom of Heaven kind of thing, because they are Romans. It's just...
I missed that part. I'm kidding.
Yeah, I know. but it's, you know... Like, this movie, I love it for so many different reasons. It's just, I can go back to this movie and never get bored. The movie, it never, the pacing of it to me, it never seems to slow down or go too fast. It's like, it's like perfect pacing. You know, it's a 2 hour, well, 2.5 hour movie, almost three if you look at the extended version. I haven't actually watched the extended version, but I want to one of these days. But those about two and a half hours, it doesn't feel like 2.5. It really goes by quick, at least in my eyes. I grew up with this movie. My grandparents used to watch it. Well, you know, I remember the first time like seeing bits and pieces of it, you know, when I was like 4 or 5 years old. Like, I remember being like, wow, this, like, Russell Crowe looks awesome. And I remember seeing like the gladiator fights, and I was like, this is cool. Like, this is cool looking. Like, this movie, I mean, and this is also the movie that helped to kind of revitalize the whole, what they call the sword and sandals genre. And because after this, you know, Troy came out after this, and that, you know, that Brad Pitt movie, and but it wasn't, it,
and
it 300 wasn't
quite, and then et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, but the thing is, like, but none was quite the same as this. This was, I mean, not only was it just had better acting overall, but it's just, the story was better. The pacing was better. Like, this one was the one that, if you try to do it again, and that's why, like, I want to see the new one, but if you try to do this again, it wouldn't feel the same. This kind of felt like that, like, one kind of shiny moment of the turn of the century. Like, this is like one of the turn of the century movies, the Y2K movies, that is just like, it's a classic. You know, it's a classic. When you watch it, you know, I mean, this is the movie that also put Russell Crowe on the map, Joaquin Phoenix on the map, like those two especially. Like, this is the movie that did it, because no one knew who they really were before this.
I mean, you know, people kind of had an idea. Didn't Buffalo Soldiers with Joaquin Phoenix come out before this? Like, maybe a year or two before this, but no one really, like, people knew, but they didn't know, really. Like, this is what made him worldwide famous. I mean, yeah. His villain, like, Russell Crowe is great in this, don't get me wrong. And I love him for this movie and for a couple others I've seen over the years. I love his work. But Joaquin Phoenix, if you want to show somebody the mark of a good actor, you show them this movie. Because Joaquin Phoenix is phenomenal in this movie. This is one of my, I mean, it's one of my favorite movies ever. But you can feel every emotion that he goes through in this movie, whether it's, you know, feelings of sadness, feeling like, you know, being passed over as the emperor.
Wait, that was Joaquin Phoenix?
Yes.
You just noticed it.
What the hell? There's no way. I thought it was I thought it was just some random actor. Cause he looks so young.
Joaquin Phoenix plays Commodus, Rob. He plays the main bad guy.
He doesn't look like Joaquin Phoenix at all. He doesn't look like the Joker. What the hell?
This was 20 years before that.
What the hell? Okay, wait, pause for a moment. Oh my god, wait.
God, last time it was Sam Worthington and the Hurt Locker, and now it's...
I mean, this one you have to excuse me for, because Russell Crowe looks exactly the same, just a little bit older. That does not look like Joaquin Phoenix at all.
I'd say Russell Crowe looks much more different than Joaquin Phoenix did back then.
Okay. Yeah. I thought it was just, that makes it even more impressive. Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
How did I manage to blow your mind off of something so simple?
Because that doesn't look like the Joker? Come on.
Oh my god. So if I never said his name, you would have never brought it up, would you?
It was some random B-list kid actor or something. Like that guy from Star Wars.
No.
That's hilarious.
Oh my god, no, because Joaquin Phoenix, obviously, you know, smothering his own father for being passed up as the emperor of Rome.
He freaking choked him to death.
Yes. that scene alone, where you can see him both the sinister side of him and the sad side, like the depressed, angry side in him. Seeing all those emotions come, that scene alone is worth the price of admission for this movie probably back in 2000. But there's so many things, you know, that's why people to this day, that's also why Hassan Reddick's, you know, sack celebration was the thumbs up, thumbs down thing, because that's the whole point. You know, obviously thumbs down meaning to kill him. So, you know, when it comes to, you know, this movie, I mean, the quotes alone are some of the most memorable quotes of the last 25 years.
Oh my god.
In movies.
Hang on. You sold me queer giraffes? Like, bruh, that would not be allowed today. When I heard that, I was like, wait a second. What?
Like,
that would not be allowed today at all. Jesus.
Well, actually, it might, because you'd have to consider the time period in which that
movie historical is. Context.
Yeah, historical context, yeah. Sure.
So, like, you know, because there's things that Commodus, that Joaquin Phoenix's character says in this movie, that's like, if it was any other time period, like if this was a modern movie, oh my god, it would get banned. But because from, you know, from that time period, it's like, yeah, then you realize you get the gist of it.
Well, it's like the N-word was fine in Red Dead 2.
It's the
1800s. Like, obviously, it's messed up to say that now. Yeah. But like, at that time, for historical accuracy, it's like, yeah, that's just what people said.
I'm
you know?
Still mind blown that was Joaquin Phoenix. My brain is just imploded.
Yeah, but like, so when it comes to just how just evil his character is, and how, I mean. Their final scene, or even the scene where, you know, at the very end, you know, Russell Crowe is sitting there waiting, you know, for his turn in the arena, and he's basically shackled to the wall, or pretty much, and you know, he stabs him right in the side to basically slowly kill him. And he's like, "What do you say? What do you say to me? You know, bleed for me, brother?" Because they did look at each other as close, you know, friends, pretty much almost brothers. And it almost feels like, I mean, this story is a tragedy. It is, because pretty much by the end of it, like 90% of the characters you love in this movie die. So, like, you know, those two, they die. Obviously, the most of the gladiators that you see in this movie, who are, I mean, they're kind of background characters, but they kind of become, you know, friends of Russell Crowe's character. They pretty much die. So, like, it's just one of those movies. This is a movie that I look at it almost like the Sopranos. I mean, because people used to say, like, when the Sopranos came out, that it, and also same time period, same Y2K time period, you know, that you didn't want to root for the bad guy. You know, you felt bad rooting for the bad guy, but it's like, but the bad guy was so entertaining and compelling, you couldn't help but kind of like root for the bad guy. And that's how I feel with this movie, man. But the thing is, every time I watch this movie, like, it's the only movie I've ever watched where I look at Commodus, I look at Joaquin Phoenix's character of Commodus, and I'm like, that son of a bitch. Like this guy. Like the, you know, the audacity, the balls on him. Like, it's such a good movie when you realize, you know, just how well it's acted. I mean, you know, look at the subplots with kind of like the old romantic love interest in Lucilia. How you can tell she still has feelings for him, but obviously he moved on a long time ago, had his own wife and child that were taken from him. But it's funny how he kind of looks, not so much in a way, but he also kind of looks after Lucius as like his own son, as his own child in a way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which I think is a really cool kind of little storyline between them. And obviously that's what inspires why we have Gladiator 2, because that's Lucius as a grown up gladiator. So, but there's one thing that this movie did the best. And it's one movie where I compare like every action movie that comes out to it. The action scenes and editing in this movie are great. The action scenes in this movie, it's like a thrill ride. I loved watching every single action scene in this movie, whether it was a fight in the arena or it was simply just an action scene where, you know, two characters are kind of just arguing, because they're arguing is an action. So even just an argument between two characters, just, it seemed like, you know, or like there's one scene where Lucilia slaps Commodus in the face, like after she kind of like rejects like his advances. Back then, that was a common thing, because even though it was family, that happened way back when. You know, she slaps him in the face, and you can see the kind of disgust on her face, but the hurt in his eyes. That's another thing too. Joaquin Phoenix plays this movie so well, you can read almost everything he's feeling through his eyes. And it's just every character, you know, they'll say how they're feeling, or they'll stick, you know, you can feel the anger behind every word, or whatever it is, or the sadness, or the happiness behind every word. But they do talk a lot with their eyes in this movie, and that's what I like. So
to the soul.
Yeah. And you can see how when a lot of times the characters do give kind of like those kind of long looks into each other's eyes, and you can kind of see what, you know, the wheels kind of spinning in their head, you know, what they're thinking in that moment, or even lack thereof. But this movie can't do anything wrong to me. Like, this is the one movie, and it's rare, and I know people, you know, Rotten Tomatoes doesn't give it the highest rating in the world. It gives it like a 79%, whatever it is. But for me,
Rotten Tomatoes sucks.
It does suck. Thank you.
that's the common theme every week. Rotten Tomatoes sucks.
But that's why I'm always like, yeah, look at that rating and be like, well, that's bullshit. Here's my rating. And this is the one movie it's going to be, I'm not going to give it a 10, no movie's a 10, but I'm going to give this more than a 9.5. This is a 9.7.
Damn.
Out of 10.
Damn.
I love this movie.
I have already kind of said my piece, because I think the main thing with this movie is, like, I realize, like, I love, like, movies like Northman, for example. I really enjoyed The Northman. I was like, wait, this feels like The Northman. Wait, hang on. This movie is the reason we even got The Northman. So, like, for me, it's that's really what sticks out for me. It's just the fact that he really pioneered this very aesthetically bizarre genre, as you talked about. A lot of the dialogue is just so terrible by today's standards. That in movies like The Northman, like the story is so, like, tried and true of these movies we've seen in the last 20 years, from, you know, the family dying, kids dying is like another kind of extension of it. But, like, this movie pioneered it. And for that, yeah, this gets a 9.5 for me. I thought there was some points of the plot where I was like, are they ever going to get back to this? And they do in such a subtle way. In a way that's perfect, but also subtle. And I really enjoyed that. So, yeah, for me, this is a 9.5. I love Tenet, which we're going to do next week. So that's, I it's going to be a disgrace for me to put this Tenet above it, but I will. And Brandon's going to hate me for it next week. But
I don't care. If
Brandon, I'm going to hate you.
I don't care. I don't care if Tenet's the greatest movie ever, and I'm sure it's well, it's your favorite, Rob. It's I'm not putting Tenet ever above Gladiator.
See, I'm making so many Tenet jokes because I can't wait for you to watch it, Brandon, and go like, "This is your favorite movie? How much of an idiot are you?" That's probably what you're gonna think.
Can I tell you that when I saw the teaser trailer for it in the theaters for the first time, like when it debuted, and when they finally kind of did like the full, like, the rollout for it, and it was just like that, it was like a 30-second teaser trailer. I was literally sitting there, and I think it was for the Batman. I think that's when I saw it, and I don't know if it was the Batman. I forget what movie it was I went to see, but I sat there after that 30-second teaser trailer. I was like, because for certain teasers, you kind of you get a feeling of what it is. I was like, what the hell is this?
I'm so anticipating, especially since we know Shane's thought about it, and we'll get to it. I'm just anticipating your reaction, be like, what the hell? Like, you're just, oh, Jesus. But that being said, this movie's just so good. Like, Gladiator's amazing. Like, this is a fantastically made film. And, this is 9.5 for me. But again, for me, what stuck with me so much is how it just pioneered this genre of films that are very similar to this movie in a lot of ways, but also evolved it in different ways. I think The Northman being a great example. But this movie pioneered so much of filmmaking for me. And when you look at, especially for it at the time, and the visual style of Ridley Scott at the time, this very weird slow motion style that's very, like, I'll be honest, very unpleasing at moments by today's standards, but by those standards, it's how they did action movies, right? So I just think when you look at it as, let's just put it this way, I look at that movie as a period piece of what filmmaking was like at that time, but also the perfect example of what filmmaking was at that time. So yeah, for me, it's a 9.5 for those reasons. Shane, where I kind of want to direct you in this is Ridley Scott and his filmmaking and what he does as a director, because he's also very unique in how he does film. So I wanted to get your approach on that as well. We let you have your time on this film.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he's... it's interesting because his films are all so different from one another in terms of, like, the subject matter You know, mm-hmm. I mean, you have this, and then you have movies like Blade Runner, and then you have movies like The Martian.
Yep.
Nothing in common between the three whatsoever. yet every time I watch any of them, you can tell, you can see his mark on it. Mm-hmm. Because ultimately, what he does so well and what works with this movie in particular is telling a simple yet entertaining story in a very, you know, kind of unique, wild circumstance. You know, when you look at Gladiator specifically, it's, you know, they have these really cool action scenes, obviously, and it looks amazing, and it's, you know, there's plenty of entertainment value and all that. But, you know, at its core, I mean, this is a very, you know, it's a story about a man who is grieving the loss of his wife and child, and now he is sort of fighting back against corruption in order to pursue justice for them.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, you know, that's the thing. I mean, it's not... Excuse me.
He's basically Batman. He's a dead family.
he's ancient Roman Batman.
I'm Batman.
Yeah. No, that's funny. I never thought of that. but yeah, no, I mean, you know, all jokes aside, it's like he... It, you know, we think of ancient Rome and it's like, oh, that was so long ago and life was so different. Then, yeah, it was. It was very, very different, obviously. Things have changed a lot since then. But what stayed the same is people having family values and love for their spouse and their kids and whoever, you know. So, you know, taking advantage of something that we can relate to and making a story about that is really brilliant. Same thing with, you know, like The Martian, which I brought up earlier, so I'll just bring it up again. You know, it's, none of us can relate to going to Mars because no human's ever done that. But what we can relate to and what we do relate to is that movie is how terrifying it is for this guy to be truly alone and just how scary the thought of that is. And not only is he alone, but he's like the only person on the entire planet. So, you know, I mean, we all lost our minds. Well, not all, but a lot of people went crazy during, you know, 2020, during the pandemic when we had to stay home for 3 months, you know, and you could still go to the grocery store and run into people and, you know, see people walking outside or whatever and hang out with your family. He had nobody. So anyways, but this isn't about The Martian. This is about Gladiator.
We have to do that movie, by the way. Didn't do it last year,
yes,
did we?
No, we didn't. Okay.
We have to do it at some point.
It's, I have a very long list for our movies, because I like to do...
We'll
like,
take time.
I kind of like to do one of each genre every year, so that'll be our science fiction movie probably next year.
Yes, the Elon Musk space movie category. Yay.
But, God. Yeah. But anyway, so, yeah, with Gladiator, though, you know, you touched on, I think, was it Brandon? You touched on the cinematography of the fight scenes.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to elaborate on that for a second, because I also love, love, love how the action scenes are shot in this movie. Mm-hmm. Because the camera is very active. It moves a lot, but it's not shaky. And it's not a bunch of, you know, the problem we run into these days with a lot of action movies is extremely tight shots on fights, probably to hide bad choreography, but it's also just like, you know, a style and a look, which I don't know why, but whatever. And then very shaky camera. So it's like, you know, for instance, The Winter Soldier, love that movie, but that first fight that Steve and Bucky have, or sorry, the Winter Soldier have, in the, like, under the highway.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I can't tell what the hell's going on in that fight, because it's just, it's because it's, the camera is so tight on them, and it's just, I mean, it's like the person operating the camera is, like, having low blood sugar and having shakes or something. And I can make that joke. That happens to me. But, you know, and it's like, what? Like, seriously, this is the best we can do here, you know? anyways. But yeah, no, that's not the case here. The camera's still, you know, it's moving a lot, as it should. I mean, it's action. It's, you know, there's lots happening. It's exciting. But, you know, it's not, it keeps it pretty wide, to the point where, like, you know, you can see their whole body.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, crazy idea, I know, but and it's not shaky, so you're not you know, dizzy as you're sitting there watching it. You can actually digest what's happening. And you know, there's a fine line you gotta walk, though, because a lot of times action scenes can be, you know, it can be the style where it's like this, where, you know, there's just one wide shot that goes for a while, but then you can kind of tell that, like, you can start to see the choreography. Good example, that's the Star Wars prequels and the lightsaber fights there. But this is, you know, it cuts enough so that it still feels authentic, I guess. So yeah, I really, really admire that. And let's see, what's the last? Oh, yes, the soundtrack. This is one of my 10 favorite soundtracks in movie history. Spoiler alert for my list that we'll reveal at the end of the year. And I think this is definitely Hans Zimmer's best work. You know, I've told Robert about this. I think Hans Zimmer is slightly, and I mean slightly, overrated.
I'm sad, but okay.
He's great. He's amazing. But everybody's like, yeah, it's John Williams and then Hans Zimmer. And I'm like, yeah, it's John Williams and then a few people and then maybe Hans Zimmer. Sorry, but that's just my opinion.
Ledwig Göransson, who Brandon will talk about next week, by the way.
Yeah, yep. Ledwig Göransson. I would argue Michael Giacchino.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, there's a couple others.
But speaking of Tenet, I cannot wait. We're going to go deep on Ledwig Göransson next week. Because, god damn.
I know a lot about him because obviously he's worked with Donald Glover.
Yeah.
So.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to tap into that next week.
There's a, who's that other composer? I can't think of his name, but he's amazing as well. Anyways. So, but yeah, the soundtrack, it sounds very Roman, which that doesn't make sense, but,
it took me a bit to process that, but that was funny.
That's the best I can describe it. But it's also, it's just, it's so, and the best example, I think, is the very end song, where it's, it has that beautiful vocal melody. It's just, like, very airy as he enters, you know, like, the heavens or whatever. And, but, you know, you have that really heavy, like, percussion backing, like a, you know, like a battle, like a, you know, like music you would picture when you'd think of a gladiator scene. And, you know, just the way that those are balanced, it's, yeah, it's just incredible. And it's beautiful. So, yeah, I really, really dig the soundtrack here. You know, overall, I think I'm going to give it an A minus, and the only reason it's a minus and not a full A is because, you know, Brandon, you brought up the runtime. For me, it did feel a little long, especially towards the beginning.
That's fair.
But, you know, like the first act, but I think acts two and three are so strong that it's like, it makes up for it a little bit. So yeah, overall, this is probably, you know, top three for me of the movies that we've seen so far this year.
I have a sneaking suspicion that this is going to finish at one. I really do. Like, it just, yeah, it's great.
Yeah. And I, you know, and I did have this on my list for movies for us to do, like on the historical movie, and, you know, history movies, I guess.
This more goes into the category, just, we're doing it before the, or during the second movie.
Right. But I forgot that movie was coming out this year. So I was looking at it and I was like, yeah, we'll do that next year or whatever, and because I want to do this history movie. But then Brandon was like, wait, we should do it. And I was like, oh yeah, no, you're right.
Do you guys
want to thank you for the suggestion.
The list of movies that we've done before the second movie came out, what is it? It's Venom.
Joker.
It's Joker, yeah. Venom, and Gladiator. That's not...
I wonder which one of those is better than the other.
And it's two Joaquin Phoenix movies. Wow.
Yeah.
Jesus. The fact that Venom's on that list is pretty good.
I can't. God.
But yeah, any last thoughts? I know, Brandon. This is gonna be your favorite. Even I know you have a movie that you're gonna pick later in the year, but. This is 100% one of your favorite movies ever. So you've been geeking out about this since we came up with the idea in like week five to do this damn movie, and it's finally done.
That's why I'm gonna, when it comes to my turn to pick a movie, I gotta pick something that I really love as much as this. That way, by the end of the year, I can not be biased towards this movie. I need to find something that will knock this off my top spot for now, because until we get to, I mean, The Martian might be close, but I mean that might be that. That's not till next year, so it's like, I mean, at this point, I really hope we find something that can knock this off, because until further notice, this is my number one.
Please let it be Tenet. Please, for the love of God.
I'm telling you right now, it is not gonna be. We're gonna find out on Thanksgiving when I'm sitting around not watching the awful football games. We are gonna find out how much I really like this movie or really hate it.
Yeah. I'll find out on Black Friday when we do it. I will read Shane's scathing review. By the way, Shane, you probably DM me that so I don't lose it. But
of course.
Shane's review is very scathing of this movie, and mine is very glowing. So
I could just
I would rather read it when we're doing the film.
Really, yeah, I was going to say, I could just give it really quick right now, since I won't be here.
But also, I don't want you to spoil it. Well, just give the letter grade on this damn movie. What is it?
No, I'm not going to spoil it, obviously.
No, but all I'm asking is for the letter grade.
That's a good question.
Oh no! Is that Brandon? Is this helpful for you?
I need to think about it.
I need to think about it. Oh no.
I mean, yeah, probably somewhere in the C range.
Oh God. Oh no.
There are great things about it. I mean, the cinematography is fantastic.
Brandon, does that give you any confidence that a resident movie person here gave it a C?
I legit thought that he would give it like a D. Just describing.
No. It's not that bad.
Just by you saying, "Oh my god, I fucking hate it," I'm like, okay. Well, then I don't.
No. See, here's the thing. That's relatively speaking for Nolan. Because Nolan, the standard is already high.
Extremely high. Like, extremely high, yeah.
Because, you know, I mean, you look at his, like, the Dark Knight trilogy, amazing. Inception, fantastic. Interstellar, my favorite of his work. You know, just absolute bangers. And then there's this, and I'm like, okay, I mean, it's not, like, the worst thing I've ever seen, but, like...
See, Shane says this, and I'm like, it's my favorite Nolan movie. It unequivocally is, even for its flaws. So let me quickly. The reason why I keep talking about Tenet is I'm just so excited to hear Brandon's review of this movie. Like, I'm just so excited. But again, I'm gonna quickly go over the rules of watching Tenet. Because yes, part of the problem.
I'll say C plus.
Okay, C plus. Part of the problem is. Yeah. There are rules to watching this film. There are rules. And if you don't follow them, going to be a problem.
The rules very clear.
The rules are, you must watch with captions or your ears will bleed. I swear.
I usually do.
I watched this movie in a theater. I did. I watched the movie in the theaters in IMAX. And I could understand it because I watched it 3 times beforehand. Brandon, this is gonna be my 5th time watching this movie. I've watched this movie 5 times now. That's how much I love it. But that was my 4th time, and I sat there going, if I didn't know every single line of this movie, I would not understand what's happening at all. Like, genuinely, I would not. The sound mixing is atrocious. Number 2 is there's no character development at all. Brandon, I'm just going to tell you this right now. You know what the main character's name is in the movie?
I remember looking up the cast, but I cannot remember what it actually is now.
The main character's name is the protagonist.
Oh, God.
That's it. His name is the protagonist.
Oh, God.
So, there you go. So, there's no character development at all. Besides... Some little Easter eggs that I need you to that I'm gonna tell you, and it's gonna blow your mind even more. So yeah, don't focus on character, focus on plot, and please watch with captions or your ears will die. Shane, the captions part you have also been very strong on. I think because you told me that the first time I watched it, you have to watch the movie with captions, right? Like it's a must.
Yeah, it's confusing enough as is, so you know. You have to.
It's confusing. That's already gonna hurt me.
I guess for me, it's like Nolan's movies are obviously like his brain is clearly, you know, a gear ahead of most people's. And I feel like in his movies, he presents them in a way where we can digest it or understand kind of like what he's thinking. It's like, oh, you know. But this movie, that's not as much the case. It's like, I feel like he just went a little too far where I was like,
yeah,
you lost me.
No, I'm going to be real honest. It took me. Also, there's another golden rule. Probably so captions is number one. Number three is no character focus. Number two, and please follow this, Brandon. Rewind if you need to, as much as you need to. I'm being serious.
Oh, I do that already.
I'm telling you, do you want to guess how many times I rewinded watching this movie the first time I watched it?
I would say, what, 20?
200. Almost every minute.
Oh, you won't.
Almost every minute, I was like, wait, what? What? So
now, all that being said, I did only see this movie once. So, on Thursday, when I'm on the plane, I'm going to watch it again.
Yes.
And then so, I'll let you know.
Okay, good.
If my opinion changes. Because it probably will.
At all.
Yes.
But yeah, there's some fun facts about this movie that we'll get to. But yeah, no, I'm very much anticipating doing Tenet. This is the movie I've been most anticipating doing. And then Shane's going to take over for Wildcard Weekend for me, so... but yes, I'm very like Gladiator was the movie Brandon was most anticipating. Next week is mine. I'm so excited.
I'll find it absolutely hilarious if of all the movies we do this year, the ones that you guys pick as your number one movies in the rankings are the ones you guys suggested.
Right?
Yeah.
I'll feel like I failed as my job at my. Whatever I am, I don't know.
The movies are
even last year when we like the what was it, the first movie we did was like Collateral. I was like, yes, I want to do Collateral.
Well, here's the thing. What were the movies that we suggested last year? So last year it was Booksmart, which kind of finished.
And The Grinch.
Okay, The Grinch. No, but I was getting there, Shane. I was progressing to that film. You blew the lead. Okay, no. So it was Booksmart. What did Brandon pick last year? It wasn't The Grinch. Grinch was like the Christmas consensus.
That was the Christmas one we kind of agreed on altogether. But the one I picked was what was it?
Do we even remember? I'm trying to remember what it was.
Oh, that's how you know it wasn't memorable. Shit. No, oh, what did we do? Oh, no.
Do we have the list somewhere here?
I think it was Grinch, because then in the divisional round, we just skipped it.
Oh, that's right, we did. You did do the Grinch. Oh, God.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Much better choice this year.
Yeah, because there were movies that I wanted to do because there were
here's the thing. Gladiator is in our like, hey, we're gonna watch this movie before the second one list. So you're still gonna get a pick. And then also Will is gonna get a pick as well this year, so I'm very excited to see what Will's gonna pick.
Yeah.
Will should do Wildcard instead of me.
Okay. Will, have a movie in mind, buddy. I'm actually very excited to know what you're gonna. I'm very excited for that. I'm very excited.
Robert, would you say Tenet is sci-fi? Yeah.
No, it's in its own category. It's in its own bubble.
If you had to classify it as something,
I classify it as time. That's it.
So sci-fi. Great.
Damn it, no! It's just time. That's all it is. It's not sci- Okay, wait. Is Inception sci-fi?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. Then yeah, Tenet is sci-fi. It's basically the same the same fucking movie, just significantly worse.
I mean, it's not comedy, like
there's some funny moments.
Tenet, not a biopic.
Tenet is listed on Wikipedia as a science fiction action thriller film. What the hell is that?
That's about right.
That's about right, yeah. I can already tell from Brandon's reaction to just the Wikipedia page he's going to have trouble with this film. Will, I need you to watch this as well. I need your opinion on this. I haven't seen it.
I look at the first, like, two sentences. It just says, the film follows a former CIA agent who was recruited into a secret organization tasked with tracing the origin of objects that are traveling backward through time and their connection to an attack from the future to the present. Why would anybody want to watch something like
this? Is this time travel?
No, it's not. It is, but it isn't. Let's just frame it that way.
This is gonna wreck me.
Yeah, this because I'm a beef with time travel, like the multiverse.
If Will has a beef with it, he's gonna have problems with this movie. Will, please watch this film. Please, right. For the love of God, watch this film. I want to hear your take on it. Oh no, I'm already anticipating it. Oh Jesus, I'm so excited. All right,
week 14. We'll do Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
Yes! Oh my god, a palate cleanser.
For our romance movie.
A palate cleanser.
Yeah, I like that movie too.
A palate cleanser. Well, a palate cleanser for Will and Brandon. For Brandon, for Will, for Shane, for myself, thank you all for watching. Any final thoughts before we call it a night and we have the Harbaugh Bowl tomorrow night?
The Harbaugh.
That's gonna be fun.
Gonna be a good one. Justin Herbert versus Lamar Jackson. That's gonna be good.
Gotta love it.
It's gonna be so good. And then Brandon and I will be back on Black Friday to recap. It will be an atrocious Thanksgiving slate.
Last game's pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Will, of course, you're always welcome if you want to enjoy the sad party that we're gonna have. Tommy DeVito versus Cooper Rush is our highlight.
You mean Danny DeVito?
Danny DeVito's a better option.
Yeah.
And potentially Desmond Ritter versus Patrick Mahomes. If it's not Aiden O'Connell.
Are you kidding me? Yeah. No wonder just put Max Crosby on there. He's the face of that franchise now.
Just have him playing quarterback. But yeah, for us, thank you for a fun show, guys. All the pandemonium ensues every week, as it did again this week. So hope you all enjoyed, and we will see you back here tomorrow night for the Harbaugh Bowl. Our edition of the college football bowl games that actually matter more than a college football bowl game. The Harbaugh.
Yeah.
We'll see you then.
The Harbaugh. Take care, everyone.
Take care.
Have a good one, everybody.